This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you been struggling lately? Maybe you're having trouble sleeping, difficulty with a relationship, or just suffering from low self-esteem. If so, then BetterHelp wants to help you. BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen and to help you. You get to talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience. There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network, and they give you access to help that may not be available in your area. You just need to fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Join the 2 million plus people who have taken charge of their mental health with an experienced BetterHelp therapist. And there's a special offer to Nowhere to Be Found listeners. You'll get 10% off of your first month, but only if you go through the link or type in betterhelp.com/NTBF for Nowhere to Be Found. That's better, HELP.com/NTBF. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. And you can find the link in our show notes and on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com. Tonight's episode is brought to you by Oregon Wild Rice. Oregon Wild Rice is a local company that we are so excited to be partnering with. The Langdon family have been farming in Harrisburg for approximately 120 years. They started out as a farm to sustain their growing family and then grew into commercial farming. 80 years ago, they acquired 140 acres with heavy clay soil. For 75 years, the family had drained the land and tried to grow grass seed with varying results. 5 years ago, they decided to stop fighting the land. They moved some dirt, built berms on two sides, and within 3 days, they had rice paddies. So far, they have not had to add water to the paddies. Oregon Wild Rice grows in 100% Oregon rain. I love that this rice is locally grown and sustained right here in Harrisburg. It's important to know where your food comes from these days. Here in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't get any better than Oregon Wild Rice. I got to try their wild rice recently, and I can honestly say that I've never seen rice like this before. I'm genuinely a picky eater and greet most foods with skepticism, but I was blown away. Their rice is a healthy, delicious, better choice side dish. So thanks again to Oregon Wild Rice for sponsoring tonight's episode. I'll post the link to their website in our show notes so you can check them out. Previously on Nowhere to Be Found.
I probably went up by like a quarter to a half a mile in each direction and we saw nothing. So I went back. I know that there was definitely people who stayed up. I'm not sure about like all night, but like there a lot of people were not in bed by the time I went to bed. He just seemed a little out of it. I couldn't really tell what was up, if he was just shy or just didn't feel like talking or whatever. But
like what kind of out of it? Just laying down.
I'm your host, Amanda Papineau. And this is Nowhere to Be Found. Michael has a ton of friends. That's been clear this whole time. But up until now, I've only heard from the girls in Michael's life, and not at all from his close guy friends. Tonight, we'll hear my interview with two of Michael's closest friends, Robbie and Woods.
Okay, so I just kind of wanted to talk to some of Michael's friends, and when I talked to Parrish and Tina, they said, you were my guys. And Krista kind of confirmed that, too, that you guys are really close with Michael and would have a good idea of, you know, what he's kind of like outside of the family, how he is with his friends and stuff. And so I really appreciate you guys being able to come on here and do this.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Let's start with Robbie. Like, how did you first meet Michael?
Let's see. I first met Michael back in 2015. his roommate at the time was a really good friend of mine. And we had went to a festival, and he said, come hang out in Oregon for a week. So we drove like 2 days back to Oregon with minimal sleep. And so when we got back to my friend's house, I fell asleep for a long time. And Michael, before I knew him, I had seen him around on like mutual friends on Facebook, but I hadn't really had a conversation with, I'd never had a conversation with the kid. Just kept trying to wake me up, you know, to like hang out with me. And so I'm just like, who's this kid who wants to hang out with me so bad? Like kind of annoyed, like, cause I'm like, you know, hungover from the festival, haven't slept. And then like when I wake up and like start hanging, like, oh no, it was really quick that he cut through all that hungover bullshit. And he just was like, come on, let's go to these food trucks down the street. And so that was like the start of my relationship with Michael. I'm just a really happy, like loving kid who wanted to be my friend.
That's so cool.
Right. Yeah. It was just the energy about it. Just the warm and not like an annoying vibe at all. Just like a warm brotherly, like, come on, let's hang out. And it was, yeah.
That's awesome. I love that. How about you, Woods? How did you meet Michael?
I was at, homie's house, just kicking it, and Michael, there was probably like 10 people there or something, and Michael was there, but I didn't know him. I didn't know, like, I had just moved to Eugene and I didn't know most of the people there. I farted and I was just like, hey, sorry guys, that was me. And Michael claimed. Thought it was hilarious, so he like came up to me and started talking to me.
That is probably the best icebreaker I think I've ever heard. That's how you started your relationship on a real level. Like, you guys already cut through the crap. You're like, all right, here's what it is. That's hilarious.
Yeah, he's definitely that kind of person too, so that's why he thought it was hilarious probably.
Yeah,
the definitely. Jokes. This kid's got jokes on jokes.
Yeah.
Let's start with Robbie. Robbie, how would you describe Michael?
You know, it's hard to kind of put into words just because he was a very unique and just special human being. A lot of people, I don't know, like a lot of people have like infectious smiles and things like that, but Michael had just like infectious like energy about him. He always wanted to make people like just feel good, you know. He just wanted to love on people. He loved people unconditionally. It didn't matter what you looked like, what kind of background you came from. He gave everybody a chance, just became their friend, like they were like family or someone he's unknown for, you know, years and years. Yeah, and then just on top of that, a sense of humor. Just a funny kid that type dude. We'd get into like prank wars and shit like that. And just also awesome artistic side that he was starting to develop and really pursue just through his passion for music and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. What kind of stuff are we talking? Like, I know he kind of started to make some of his own beats and stuff.
Well, yeah, he learned how to DJ and started DJing at a friend's events and started making beats. And he just had a vision. He wanted to, like, recently, he wanted to start throwing events, but more specifically, like, just being able to create, create a safe space for people to come and listen to music because, he just wanted to create a safe environment for people to pursue, you know, their passion of music, because a lot of times in today's culture, you know, a lot of the events thrown, you know, may not be the most, safe or ran properly. So.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Woods, how about you? Kind of the same thing. How would you describe Michael?
I would describe him as a person who pretty much anyone could get along with, like, under almost any circumstance. He was like one of those people who, like, even if you weren't friends with him and you were hanging out with him, you still felt like it didn't feel like he, like it was forced or anything. It was like very easy to like, he's a very easy, like friendly person to be around. And then, yeah, just same as Robbie too. He's just hilarious. Like I've laughed harder with that kid about the most ridiculous shit that doesn't even make sense than I have with like pretty much anyone else. Like,
yeah, you just get each other.
Yeah, he just has like a really warm, friendly, happy, funny presence.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's funny. Like both you guys kind of said the like warm, infectious thing, like he pulls you in. That's exactly how I felt about Krista.
Mm-hmm.
When I first talked to Krista, I like got off the phone with her and I was like, wow, she's like my new favorite person. She is so easy. So easy to talk to. I was like, I don't know if she's like this with everyone or we just hit it off. I'm like, wow, we're best friends now.
Yeah.
Great.
She's totally like that.
And so when you were describing that, like, it flows. There's no, like, it's not forced at all, even as a stranger, like when I was a stranger. And then as I got to know her and then met her in person, I was like, whoa, you have like you're like a magnet. You like pull people into you. I find myself like just chatting with her throughout the day. And I was like, oh, you're so easy. And I feel like that's what people are trying to get across to me about Michael, which would make perfect sense.
Yeah, they're definitely cut from the same cloth.
That's cool. Okay. So when was the last time you guys talked to Michael, or when's the last time the three of you guys were in a room together?
Well, the last time the three of us, we're in a room together, I'd want to say it was probably on my birthday. Went up to Portland to all of our mutual friends' house. And Michael was there, and Michael, like, I was annoying, just messing with him all night, like we do, like just fucking around with him and all that. And just annoying the shit out of him all night. And he kept like saying some like vague threat, like, oh, it's okay, I got a great present for you or something, like something along those lines. And then at one point in the night when I had a lot of drinks, like I got grabbed by my friends and I was like, oh, what the hell is going on? And then like Michael comes around the corner like with this little like shaky like dance like slow walk thing, and one hand he's like wagging his finger, and then in the other one he has this cake, this like burger shaped cake, and just with like the devious little grin and the way he was looking at me, I knew I was doomed. And then he like threw it in my face, but like he pied me good. So
it was at the we also just had like done like saying him happy birthday too. I have a really good video of it.
Yeah,
of him getting hit with the cake.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he got me good. So that was funny. The last time I saw him personally was the weekend before he went missing. He had a couple friends over at his house. Yeah, I don't know. I was just a little bit down, but like I wasn't saying anything. Like I didn't say anything to make him think out. He just kind of picked up us a little bit sad and helped me through what I was dealing with, just like the way Michael did. You know, he picked up on if any of the people around him weren't feeling anything less than the way he saw them would, you know. And he just always was building people up and making them feel good. So
I love that. Yeah, that's awesome. Such a genuine kid.
Yeah, definitely.
What about you, Woods? When's the last time you saw him?
I want to say the last time I saw him was the end of July for Cody's birthday party. We all went camping at this super cool. It was a big pain in the ass trying to find the place, because like during the summer this year, everywhere was already taken to go camping, like every single spot. But yeah, it took us like a couple hours to find a spot. We found this really cool camping spot by a waterfall. And,
nice.
Yeah, him and his roommates, Sean and Evan, came up, and me and Cody and Anna, and there was actually a bunch of us there, but nice. Yeah, I think that was like the end of July.
That's awesome.
My roommates went there too, and a bunch of dogs there.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's like fun. That's like right before he went missing, so you saw him really recently.
Yeah, I mean, because I live in Portland, so I didn't, I think that was probably like July like 20th or something, okay. Right around there.
Okay. Wow. Okay. And then, did you talk to him? Like, did you guys have any contact with him after that through text or anything like that?
Oh yeah. I mean, I texted him pretty much like throughout the day, every day.
Okay.
Yeah. Same.
Did he talk to you at all the day before he left or the day he left?
I hadn't talked to him the day he left, no.
Okay. What's your relationship been like with his family since all this happened? And did you know his family before?
So before all this happened, I had met them a few times. I've been over to his house, had dinner with them. And then after this, obviously just I've become a lot closer with them. Just we've all just tried to make sure, like, to check up on them, make sure they're okay. Just because that's what we know Michael would want to happen, you know. So yeah, we've gone a lot closer, and I think the world of them. Obviously, my heart breaks for them that they have to go through this hell. I mean, it's hard enough as his friends, you know, dealing with. You know, all of that, you know, it's strange on all of our mental health, but just the way that they've carried themselves, just with the type of tenacious, like, I don't know, just courage, really, and just pure strength. Is nothing. It's just this. Nothing short of remarkable. I think, like I said, I think the world of them. So,
agreed. How about you, Woods?
Yeah, I've gotten a lot closer to Krista for sure. I've known his parents for a few years now. I worked with Michael like 3 years ago for a summer, and they let me borrow his car, and I would like stay at their house pretty often. And just because I lived in Eugene and they lived out in Harrisburg where we worked, so I've known them decently well. But I definitely have gotten a lot closer with Krista since all this has happened. Just like you said, she's the same as Michael. She just it's really easy to talk to, and she hits me up all the time just to check in. And yeah
that doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, I try to check in with his parents when I can too, but I also just know that they have a lot on their plate, and
they're very busy these days, it seems, for sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's amazing. And I think that just hearing, you know, especially Michael checking up every couple days at least with his parents, and then Krista and him being pretty much in constant connection, it makes my heart happy that you guys are kind of filling in that for him.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was Michael was always in contact with either his friends or his family, like always, you know. It's not like that's who he was.
So then, is there any doubt in your mind then that he could be alive and just walked away?
So at the end of the day, we don't know.
Of course.
But that's just the simple facts. We don't know yet, or, you know, it's an ongoing investigation. So it's hard for us to speak on that, just because when you're so close, it's like all the speculations and all the different scenarios literally drive you fucking crazy. I will say that I would be dumbfoundedly shocked if he was alive and left on his own accord.
That's basically what I was asking, like, of your own, you know, would you be shocked? So yeah, you would be. And that kind of goes with what I've gathered about him. Nobody who's super close to him feels like that's what happened. Not that it's not a possibility. Yeah. It, of course it is. But most people I talk to in their heart say no.
Right.
You feel that way too, Woods?
Yeah. I mean, I hope for the best still, but when it really comes down to it, I have no idea. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. How have you guys been involved in the search? Like, what happened after he went missing? How did you guys, what did you do?
I mean, I live in Eugene, so when I was over at a friend's house and somebody came and said, Michael's been missing for, you know, I forget how long it was then. It was like, he went missing last night. And so I'm going to go back out there and help look for him. And so I went out with him immediately and got there, I would say around 6 or 7 the following evening.
The evening of the 5th, like the, so he went missing at 4 a.m.
Yeah,
then...
it was so, yeah, right, yeah. So later that day around 7, gotcha. I went out there and, didn't feel good just because it just seemed so, it just seemed like, you know, people disappear, but just for the length of time, it was always unsettling. Right. And when I got there, it was just a mix of people who were still partying with like positive vibes, like everything was going to be okay, to really nervous and trying to like every, like, you know, just frantically trying to find them, you know? And then, yeah, it just went from there, just being in the forest every day until the forest was, until it was called off. And now we've just been waiting to hear answers, really, like everyone else.
Right, right. Yeah, that's tough. So you really were up there very quickly, though, 7 p.m. that same day. That's like about the same time the family showed up and like search and rescue had just gotten there.
Yeah, when I got there, it was like dark. It was still dark. So I didn't really see a whole lot. I didn't really know that Parrish was there until the morning after. And then I talked to him, okay. If I'm remembering it right. But yeah, yeah.
And how about for you, Woods?
I mean, I live in Portland and was working, but Tina called me when she said that he was missing, or she called me to ask if I'd heard from him because she hadn't heard from him in a while. So I called my, whoever, like the few homies I knew would have seen him, like his roommates and, checked. And, I just honestly assumed they told me that he was camping. So I just assumed he probably didn't have service. So I just texted her and was like, he probably just doesn't have service.
Right.
He's probably out there. I'm not really sure. And then, yeah. And then she called me and told me that he had been missing for 17 hours. And that's like right when they drove up there, I think, but I had to work the next day. So I worked the next day. And then after that, pretty much every single one of our friends that was close to him would, whether or not they lived in Portland or Eugene, would go up there to the forest and look for him every day that they weren't working until it was called off, basically. And I don't know, we spent multiple days like searching through various cities around the area too and putting up flyers. And
were you with the group with Anna?
I mean, some of the times I was, but we would all meet up in Eugene every time we went down there. Anna and Cody they pretty much moved down to Eugene for the whole search. They never really came back up.
Yeah. Dang, that's commitment.
But so I couldn't get off work though, so I would come back up and back down.
Dang, that's a lot of driving.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too far. And Michael would go out of his way to do anything for any of his friends, so that's why he had so many people doing the same for him.
Yeah, that's why Krista said, like, every other person who walked up was like, hi, I'm Michael's best friend. And they're like, oh, another. That's great.
Yeah.
It became like a joke.
Yeah, I mean, Michael just made everyone feel like that. That was the greatest thing about Michael. He, like, treated his friends just like he would. Like, friends he would have known years, he treated the same to, like, someone he just met, like a complete stranger.
Yeah, I can totally hear and see that in... Yeah,
and like, awesome. Yeah, I remember multiple nights where Michael like would be not even like trying to go out and party or anything, but he would like drive around all night picking us up and like taking his friends to like wherever they needed to go, just so everyone would, one, not have to pay for taxis, but also not have to worry about making a bad decision and get home without any of his friends driving drunk or anything like that. And he would just do things like that, like little tasks or like helping his friends out, even if it was like something that most people would say no to doing, he would like not hesitate to do it just because he didn't really care about that side of shit. He just liked being there for his friends.
Yeah. He sounds like one in a million. Like, I just don't really meet a lot of guys his age, I feel like, that meet that description. Like, it's very unique.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Okay, so for Woods, what do you feel like people need to know about Michael?
I mean, for anyone that's never met him, I would say that all you really need to know about him is, like, who he was as a person. Like, he was a great person, and he was working, like, for as long as I've known him, his head was in the most right place as far as knowing, like, or at least figuring out what he wanted to do and, like, where he was going with his life. And he had a lot of potential to do a lot of really cool shit, basically.
Yeah, I believe that wholeheartedly.
So, Robbie, what do you feel like people need to know about Michael?
Throughout this whole nightmare, Michael's personal life has been aired out, and at times not in a great light. It wasn't a secret that he struggled with addiction, but his demons and his struggles weren't anything different than any other person our age. And the point that I want to drive home is that Michael was aware of his downfalls, and he was making huge steps in the right direction and had a lot of potential, and he had a lot of dreams that he was making into a reality. And the most heartbreaking thing is that, you know, that he may not be able to fulfill that potential because he was changing a lot and he was making the steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
And that's the last thing I want people to know, is that he was the most genuine, caring, selfless, empathetic person that I had ever met in my entire life. So that's what I'd like people to know about Michael.
That's amazing. You guys are good friends. I told this to Natalie, but man, I hope that if anything ever happened to me, my friends would be as amazing as you guys are, because you seem to have really dealt with this tragedy the best anybody could expect. Like, this is absolutely mind-boggling stuff, and you guys are human, and this is really raw and emotional, and I think you've done a great job of, you know, checking in with the family, doing what you can to search, and also trying to figure out how to heal and start to move forward with your life. So I really I commend you guys on how you guys have been doing and how you've been holding up your end for Michael.
Well, thank you, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Well, that's everything I have. I really appreciate you guys talking to me and putting up with my questions.
Oh, sweet. Well, thank you. I hope you have the rest of your night.
You too. All right. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Have a good night.
Bye.
I asked Sean, Michael's roommate, if he'd be willing to do an interview, and he said he would rather answer any questions through a written statement. For the sake of being a more fluid interview, I had someone else read Sean's words. So, how did you meet Michael?
I met Michael through some mutual friends. The night that I met Michael, he was sitting at a computer playing music in a small room of what would all become very good friends of mine. It's fitting that this would be the scenario I met Michael in, because he loved music and his friends so much. He constantly made an effort to be surrounded by people he loved, playing music that he would find. He always pushed his artistic boundaries to find and support new artists on the internet. He loved to share new music with no expectation of anything but love in return.
How would you describe Michael?
I would describe Michael as thoughtful, loving, compassionate, and generous. Michael didn't see the world like a lot of people around him. He always saw the good in people that he met. He had so many different types of friends that were attracted to his energy. No matter who they were, Michael gave everyone a chance. Michael was also always looking out for everyone's best interest. He frequently talked about wanting to create safe spaces within our community for people to come and listen to music. This was Michael's passion outside of working. Michael didn't really like to work, but he made the decision to because he knew it would help drive his passion of creating a positive community.
When was the last time you saw Michael?
The last time I saw Michael was before he left our house to go to the party. I didn't want him to go to the birthday party because we'd been setting up our living room and wanted him to help out. He had been talking about going to this birthday party for weeks beforehand, and so he felt like he should follow through. I wish I could have forced him to stay home.
Were you involved with the search at all?
Yes, I was at the search the first night Michael was missing. It was a shit show. Some people were still partying with positive attitudes, hoping he would magically return, and some people were worried sick looking for him. I was not happy. I continued to search for Michael every day for 2 weeks in the Bryce Creek area after.
What do you think people should know about Michael?
I think people should know that Michael was a great example of what a friend and a person should act like. He had love for everyone he would meet. He was open to new ideas and never cared what others thought about that.
What's your favorite memory of Michael?
My favorite memory of Michael is when we floated the river this summer. Michael didn't want to be on his float much of the time, so he literally swam downriver for 3 hours. Michael would consistently pull his tube over to the side of the river and then take full-on penguin dives onto his inner tube to try to get back on his float. I remember specifically crying laughing with Michael on the bank of the river, but I can't remember about what. This sums up my relationship with him. Just pureness, laughter, and good times.
Next time on Nowhere to be Found.
My name is Randy James. I'm the drone guy. We've been all over the place. Where his items were found were would have been good, maybe 20, 30 feet above the waterline in the summertime.
If it's foul play, I get the dives were placed there, and he was moved.
We've been asked how our listeners can contribute to the show, so we set up an account with Patreon. Check out the link in our show notes if you're interested in supporting our cause. You can also find it on our website, nowheretobefoundpodcast.com.